Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, and you. We are loaded up. Going to get caught up with Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com and Magazine. We'll talk all sorts of things because it's midweek and you're just getting ready for the next step in Nebraska football. You have a game Saturday. You have the coaching carousel that exists. You have a new AD that is assessing things. And your mind's just full up. Mine is right now with 100 different things to attack and talk about. We'll get into Coach Diaco and his eloquence shortly after practice when asked about post Ohio State. Doesn't give you coach speak. We'll get into that as well. Brad Edwards in 1 hour. Insider college football analyst, ESPN Game Day. Brad Edwards coming up next hour. Don't forget Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, Shuey. I hope Shuey's on the course right now. Just dropped that birdie. We'll make it eagle putt. And he's en route here, so we'll have the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. It is a Golf Wednesday. It's a beautiful Wednesday. The wind isn't 2,000 miles per hour and blustery. Now, I don't know how windy it's going to be Saturday night in Purdue. I know that early temps say 40s and 50% chance of rain. So it could be a throwback classic Big Ten, run the football in the muck, in the mud, in the rain. The blood and the beer, to quote Johnny Cash, and get out of Dodge with a win. Can join us today, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Can tap the line, Schilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House. You know what Saturday means? It means stabilization. And I've been wondering about this and thinking about this. We'll talk with Vogel about this as well. But I need to go into this little part of the old kiddie pool and ask about Mike Riley, the Nebraska football fan base, the bandwagon. Okay, there are three sections, I believe. Those that have made their mind up on this team, on this staff, on this season, and you're ready for change. Doesn't matter what happens Saturday, doesn't matter what happens the rest of the year. 4-1, 5-0, 3-2, 2-3, whatever. There's a large percentage of you, or a small percentage of you, depends on who's chirping in my ear, that have just said, screw it, I'm out. I've moved on. There's another percentage of you that are staying the course because you're like 3 years in long enough. There's five games left. Let's check it out and see how this team rebounds and responds. Because you've had a really bad season in year one, finish with a flurry, and there was momentum. You can get momentum picked up. But does that momentum come attached with belief things will be different with another year, okay? Stay the course is door number two. Door number three here is undecided. And that's where you're at, I believe. And if there's a door number four, number five, you had a mansion, fine, tell me about it. But Saturday goes a long way into what aisle you either move to, stay at, or decide to kind of carry on with. That's how big Saturday is. You ever think you'd say that at the beginning of the year? The season rests on Purdue. You beat Purdue, you get to see another game. You get to see another opponent. You get to build some momentum. You get to play this thing out. I mean, what could be done if you're a Nebraska fan to, if you're doubting the direction and you have enough evidence for this season to be disgruntled? I get that. It's not gone well. But are you totally off that bandwagon? Or is there things that can be done to win you back over? Am I asking you to choose? I'm just asking if there's an answer to that. I'm not even trying to switch your mind either. I'm not trying to convince you or argue one way or the other. I think it's extremely fascinating just where you're at, what this Purdue game means. Because you got players right now that have some confidence problems. You've got some things that need to be worked out. The coaches are still coaching. The players are still playing. You hope. I think they are. But that's how big Saturday night is. And can anything be done the rest of this year to sway you back into being more into and caring about Nebraska football? I think you care. That's why you're voicing your opinion. But when it comes to support and wanting the team to perform well because of who's there and who's leading the team, that's waned because of the performances and the losses. And you don't have much faith. There's some doubt. As a fan base, 466-377-6800-825-5865. Can anything be done to get you back on the Nebraska football wagon? And if you're one of those that hasn't left, cool. That's fine, too. Brian's on hold. Let's go to the phones to get things kicked off. Brian, thanks for calling. Thanks for hanging on. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I think other than the Penn State game, we need to win every single one of them.
Look like the bully doing it.
Do you care
at this point?
I'm going to say you have to at least. Riley has to win at least three, and if he's going to lose, you better look pretty doing it. Put the lipstick on the pig and make sure you make sure that it is beautiful.
Okay,
like it better be the best loss you've ever had in your life. I mean, I'm talking 1 point, last second field goal loss. Mm-hmm. And you better be at least, I mean, Wisconsin, we're competitive into the third quarter. Mm-hmm. There's no reason that we can't at least be competitive into halftime with Penn State. I mean, I'm not expecting a win. There's no way. No.
A lot of football between now and then. A lot of football to be played Saturday night, four quarters worth, against a team that most people have written off in Purdue coming into this season. You didn't know what to expect, and they've been all right. Brian, thanks for the call. Appreciate you tuning in, man. So Brian's saying, you know, 3-2 is what he wants from a finish standpoint. I'm going to one-up that. I'm going to say 4-1 is the direction you that's not anything that you can veer away from. You're a better football team. I know Vegas is underdogging you, but you should be better, and you should beat Purdue. You should be better, and you should beat Northwestern at home. You should be better and find a way to beat Iowa, because this isn't a great Iowa team. I mean, they're really wounded, and they still have, I think Ohio State comes to Columbus here in the next couple of weeks. Fairly certain of that. So the Penn State thing, you're going to call me nuts on this, but I look at Penn State, as awesome as they are and as good as they are, say Nebraska gets hot. Just walk with me here. Danny, you just pulled the breathalyzer out. It's too early in the show to do that. Just walk with me here. And say you get hot, you start playing better defense. Coach Diaco will tell you how that's going to happen here in a little bit. And say you get a win and get some confidence Saturday night. Say you get a win and get some confidence against Northwestern. Say you go handle Row the Boat guy up in frigid Minnesota. And then it's on. It's Penn State. Penn State's death march right now is this. Okay? You just beat and annihilated Michigan. You get Ohio State on the road. And then after that, you have Michigan State. So at the end of that death march, there's little old Nebraska that, well, we're not expecting much from you, just don't screw it up. That's kind of going to be the mindset. It could be anyway. You're talking about 18 to 22-year-olds. You're trying to focus in every week. Now, Penn State's done that at an extremely high level. Crazy things can happen. Riley's pulled off upsets before. And in no way am I calling for that now. I'm saying 4-1 is quite possible. If they've regrouped, hunkered down, rededicated, fixed some things, and they go play ball. And it starts with practice. What type of looks and execution are they getting in practice? Right? Have you made any adjustments aside from the fundamentals that you went back and worked on last week? How much live work have you been doing? How much live work can you do? Because it's hurt. I get it, to be afraid of getting guys hurt. Do you have stars and starters miss practice as is because they're dinged? But when it comes to game time, Nebraska's had an issue blocking in the run game, tackling in the secondary. They've had an issue at covering at different points and parts of the field. They've had an issue at getting after the quarterback. They've had issues catching the football. Now, I know they get 2 to 2.5 hours a day to work on that. And against air, great. But against another football player, you can't drop in Ohio State's defense, I realize, and get that. But you can certainly amp up the level of competition you're seeing in practice, or just how difficult the practice is, to maybe get you ready for game speed. Has that been adjusted moving forward? I don't know. Because whatever's been going on has gotten you to 3-4. Injuries count on that. Youth counts on that. Identity question marks count on that. But there's things you can do here. And this staff and the guys on the team that have spoken about it, you know, they want to see another year for Riley. They want to do something about it. This staff wants to see another year. I mean, what are you hearing from the coaches? You just got here, especially your defensive coordinator. I mean, things will play out. Things will absolutely play out. But when it comes to getting you, the Nebraska fan, back on the football bandwagon, is there anything that can and will be done? Or have you made your mind up already that this isn't working? I'm going a different direction. Myself, I am in that kind of wait and see mode. I have not said this is not fixable. I have not made that decision yet. I want to see how these five go. I want to see how they respond. I want to see how they go about handling their business and bouncing back. And it's not really because I'm fearful of the reset and the program again going through change. If it's not going to work, it's not going to work, and you got to make change. But is it too soon to punt? You're punting on third down here. And while it looks bleak right now, at least give an opportunity to finish out the year, and they'll have that. And then see where it goes. But your three aisles right now. One, you've made your mind up, isn't going to work. Two, you're staying the course. 3 years too short. Let's see a fourth year. And then aisle three, door three, is I'm undecided. Right now I'm undecided. I think if you aren't at 7 wins or better, discussions need to happen. Because the other part of this element too and discussion point is, what type of energy and support are you having as a Nebraska fan heading into 18 if you don't believe it'll be better? And that's why Bill Callahan got offed. There was very little faith that it was going to get better, and the energy and passion around the fan base was very, very defeated. That's why you made a change then. But can it get better? Absolutely, it can get better. Some of you don't believe that it will. And time will tell if that's an accurate belief or not. can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Cork and Tap House, 466-377-6800-825-5865. But there's your three factions of Nebraska fans, in my estimation, right now. And if you're in a different faction, no one's on the same page either. And you haven't been on the same page for quite a while, since Osborne. We'll take more calls here. Brandon Vogel's coming up, as we'll get to the lines here in a moment. As coming up, a Wilderness Ridge segment, we'll get checked in with Brad Edwards, and a check on Twitter as well, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Hail Varsity on Twitter. And can email the show, Chris at HailVarsity.com. So that is what's shaking right now. Let's tell you about our friends at HailVarsity.com. Amazing recruiting coverage with Greg Smith. And you can subscribe, HailVarsity.com/to subscribe. Great content on the website for you. Also, Hail Varsity Magazine, 10 issues. Tremendous price point for you. You can check that out, 855-3-HUSKER or HailVarsity.com/subscribe. We'll get to Brandon Vogel, get his thoughts, and we'll check in with Brad Edwards. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for your time. Great to be with you. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. If you haven't seen the Hail Varsity latest rendition of Hail Varsity No Huddle from Mark Cranack, incredible stuff. It's quite funny. We welcome in a tremendous writer and author with Hail Varsity, Brandon Vogel, with us at Brandon L. Vogel. Vogues, how you doing? What's good this Wednesday?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you, Schmitty?
I'm all right. I was talking out loud the last 15 minutes about the three options, or three, not even options, three sections of Nebraska fandom, right? You have those that have checked out, those who are in staying the course mode, and then those in undecided mode. And from a unification standpoint, a stabilization standpoint, is there anything that can be done in this short term? Short term being Saturday through the end of Thanksgiving weekend by this current regime. What can get Nebraska fans back on the bandwagon? You talk with them, you write to them, and you converse with them on the message board on HailVarsity.com daily, hourly. And what's the pulse you get right now? My pulse right now is a lot have already kind of just checked out, waiting for something good to happen to get interested again. And there's a few that are very kind of staunch. Let's wait and see how this thing plays out. Let's stay the course. And then I think there's another good percentage that are in wait and see mode. They're not quite sure what to think.
Yeah, it seems like the lines are getting pretty long at door one and door three, and you don't have a lot there in that middle group with the staunch loyalists at this point. And that's kind of where we are. And it's a big challenge, I think, when you sort of look at what's left on the table for Nebraska, because I don't think there's anything that can be done this year to show that you're gaining ground on your top rivals, Ohio State, not rivals, but the top teams in the conference, mm-hmm. Ohio State, Wisconsin. And you know that that's sort of the standard at Nebraska. That's where Nebraska has historically been. That's where its fans want it to be. And that's where a lot of people feel like it belongs. So if that's kind of the ultimate judgment point, if you're not taking steps closer to that, no matter how early it is, it's going to be met with some resistance. So I think that's kind of where things are. To get people on board, I guess, you're probably looking at, I think you got to win out at home. You probably got to go 4-1.
the Penn State game is going to be tough. I don't think anybody would begrudge Nebraska if they didn't pull that one off. But you get to 4-1, you can start to talk, well, look at the three conference losses. They're probably just three best teams. Things like that start to play in your favor, and the context changes a little bit. But even then, you're going to have, you know, if that's enough to stay on, you're going to have a tough sell, I think, early in the season, because people are going to be, well, let's wait and see until something good happens to fully buy back in.
No, and I think that's fair. And because it's not year one, it is year three. While you can gather and garner momentum like happened post last time you lost to Purdue, you beat Sparty, and you finished out and you beat UCLA, and folks, I don't say forgot, but they may have forgiven the 6-7 mark because of how, A, the season wrapped up and how you lost during the season. You're talking one possession games and then the bowl win and then the recruiting machine cranked up, and you felt good about year two, and you started year two good. And then since the old horseshoe, it's been really pretty rocky, and it's been zapping of energy with the fan base. And that's the other thing. Say you do go 4-1, even if you hit a 5-0 try, you know, not a trifecta, but you get what I'm saying. Say you pull off the 5-0 mark, there's still some doubters, and I get that too, because the doubt has been earned with performance and kind of follow through and consistency. I'm not sure that 18's any better with the status quo, because there's still going to be that doubt. Okay, you rallied to save your gig and stick around. Well, what's going to happen in 18? How long do you have in 18? That there's this cloud hanging over right now, and I don't know if you can get the weather front to move out.
No, it's tough. And, you know, the objectives in year one of a coaching, a new hire, are different than any other year. So at that point, you knock off Michigan State. It's not the season people had hoped for. It was a 9-win team the year before. But that was at least, okay, well, here's something you can show in year one. But once you start that second year, it really becomes, so whatever, you know, the key objective is, we were just talking, you know, Nebraska needs to be peers with Wisconsin and Ohio State, not look like it's getting further away. The clock starts on that. So then year two becomes, are you getting closer? You could maybe argue that with Nebraska. Certainly the record was better. Here, you know, as we said, it's kind of off the table, at least in my opinion. And if you look at recruiting or computer rankings, you know, whether you put any stock in that or not, I tend to look at those things as a good guide. I feel like they're pretty objective. Nebraska's trending downward year to year. The 9-4 season, in terms of how Nebraska was ranked in a bunch of those, things like Sagarin, S&P Plus, they were worse in year two. So it's going to be tough to climb higher than what they were last year with the way this season has started. So a downward trend like that obviously doesn't help you at all either. If those pure power rankings are at all accurate, even within 5-10 spots, that's a problem. You're not showing the right trajectory.
The unification part of this, is it kind of come down to one guy when it comes to the fan base?
Yeah, and I think it's always the same guy. It's whoever gets to wear the headset. And you know, right now that's Mike Riley, and it's, like I said, it's a tough gig. You don't see a lot of fire escapes available to him right now. But we'll see. You know, when you're in this situation, the narrative changes really, really quickly. It can change week, and we'll see. You know, I think Nebraska is going to come out and play pretty well on Saturday. I really do. I didn't expect to be covering a night game at Purdue, but here we are, and one in which Nebraska was an underdog, but here we are. So the nice thing about football is you can't always sort of be defined, at least for one Saturday at a time, by the next step and what happens in those 60 minutes.
Well, Saturday night gets you to the next opportunity. And that's kind of that's, I think, how this staff's looking at it, and take care of this first and then just keep doing your thing. I mean, and that's totally the right approach to it. But again, back to margin of error, it's just so, so thin for Nebraska. Okay, HailVarsity.com, on your hot reads, you posted a link to the SB Nation article on Tennessee or Nebraska. When it comes to the air quote better job, is it even close? I don't think it's even close. I think it's Nebraska hands down, and that's not me wearing any red today. I don't have any orange on either. But it's just from a manageable and a locational standpoint, not recruiting per se, but just West versus SEC East. And man, it looks like it's pretty much a no-brainer that Nebraska is a more desirable job. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think it's really that close either. And that piece is really worth seeking out. I thought Bud Elliott, the guy who wrote it, who's their recruiting guy for SB Nation, did a really good job of outlining the key pluses and minuses for both of them. In Tennessee, in my mind, they're still the second most winningest program in the SEC. A lot of that was done early in the 20th century. Yeah, they won a national title not long after Nebraska did. That boosts them from the Phil Fulmer era. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of ways, they haven't been totally competitive. The talent are right around Knoxville. It gets pretty good. They're not far from where it gets pretty good, but it ain't really good right there. So that part of it gets a little bit probably overestimated. Now, there aren't many sort of traditional powers that aren't going to be better off than Nebraska in terms of proximity to talent. But that's really only the one thing I think that maybe boosts that Tennessee job above Nebraska for a second. And it's probably not as big an edge as we may assume, just thinking about, well, they're close to South Carolina, Georgia, et cetera.
The other thing I think, too, is, you know, you look at Tennessee and your crossover game mandation is Bama. So you're waiting for Saban to leave and Dabo to show up. Look at, I've already solved that for everybody. You have Bama. Florida will get things figured out, and Georgia looks really good. I mean, it looks like they made a great hire, and they're going to be tremendous. LSU's not going to be awful. In fact, Easy Ed's kind of gotten up off the mat. Texas A&M, whether they embrace Sumlin at some point or not, they're kind of too big to fail from a talent standpoint and always be a pain to play. I don't know if they're going to be a 10-win, but they'll be an 8-win, or they should be. And then you have Auburn. So, yeah. And those are just within your own division. The East has been king until Bama rose up. And then there's the West. And the West will kind of rise up again. And the SEC is not going to be down forever. I don't know if the Big Ten West is going to ever rise up beyond Wisconsin. And if Nebraska gets things figured out. But Northwestern and Minnesota and Purdue and Iowa. I mean, Iowa's your other option there. And if you're Nebraska, you should be competing for that West Division crown every year. So it's more manageable. And that's kind of where I'm sold. Vogue's about 30 seconds. What's coming up with you the rest of this week on HailVarsity.com?
Yeah, so getting ready to head to West Lafayette for the third time. I've been there, which is kind of shocking to realize. So we'll have all the game coverage of that coming up. Actually got a story from the yearbook that we're going to post online for the first time, sort of about that, when blue blood programs sort of break bad, what happens to them. So that'll be going online for the first time probably at some point this week. And then, you know, the usual sort of game week coverage. So it's good to be back in game week.
Vogues, you're awesome. Thanks for jumping on. Thanks for chatting with me about the Nebraska fan base. Awesome work and coverage. And be sure to get Vogues' book, Dream Like a Champion, bookstores or Amazon. Him and Coach Cook at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, we'll catch up for the forecast later in the week, bud.
All right, thanks a lot.
Take care. Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. We'll sneak in some of your calls. Shuey is on deck with Hail Varsity.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
All right, big thanks to Brandon Vogel. It is time for the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Shuey is in with the old short sleeve polo. It's wonderful looking. Mike Shuhard, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Husker Golf, WildernessRidgeGolf.com, where you log on, find out about membership pricing. They have incredible fall rates, and go see Mike Shuhard, Director of Instruction, to help with that approach shot, that mental fitness you may need with the putter. And then the confidence off the box, also director of golf, Chris Thompson, is awesome. And I want to tell you about how to fill your belly for Thanksgiving. Remember the scene from Christmas Vacation where Cousin Eddie's wife did the turkey?
Oh, yeah.
And look, there's the heart. Maybe you have that going on at your house for Thanksgiving. Not pointing at the in-law, your own beloved mother, yourself as a cooking expert, or your lovely wife. But I'm telling you, Wilderness Ridge has Thanksgiving brunch. Leave the cooking to Wilderness Ridge. They have bourbon tasting tonight. Hopefully you got signed up for. And they have Thanksgiving brunch for you. And can gather at Wilderness Ridge for Thanksgiving brunch on Thursday, November 23rd from 11 to 3. As they say it, gobble till you wobble. Get a reservation. Make it easy on you. Make it delicious on you. And can get a phone call made and get that Thanksgiving brunch hookup with Wilderness Ridge, 402-434-5118 to get your Thanksgiving brunch locked in. Hopefully it's still golf weather. We get some 60-degree November days.
Oh, yeah.
Nebraska's so good at throwing the old curveball.
Oh, yeah. You'll still have a lot of nice days. Not much better than this, man. It's perfect out there. So, 75, no wind, sunny.
You're hurting me again.
It's nice out.
Someday we'll do the old Wilderness Ridge golf segment from Wilderness Ridge.
Yeah, there you go.
On the old deck. What did you do today? Tell me about your day when it comes to either instruction or practice or getting the kids prepped or even teaching some folks a few things.
Well, today, actually, we got back last night from our last tournament of fall. So
what time did you roll in?
2:30 a.m.
Okay.
So
Shuey's out till 2:30.
Yeah.
He's not a quarterback for Cleveland.
We had a little late flight in and drove back from Omaha and got in kind of late. So today was kind of trying to catch up on a little sleep, if possible.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell me about how the tourney went and getting back into the swing of things.
It was all right. I mean, a little disappointing for our last tournament of the fall.
You just got back from Nevada.
Yeah. Yeah.
UNLV.
UNLV's tournament. So we just got back from that. We didn't perform like we were anticipating or hoping to. We did some good things, you know. But the good thing about it is that was our last tournament of the fall. So now we get to go into our off season and kind of evaluate how the fall went with each player and go through some of the things that we saw and what they did and some of the stuff they're going to work on a lot in their off season, you know, so they're ready and prepared to come out in the spring and be better.
Evaluation's kind of been a buzzword the last couple of weeks, and I want to kind of get your take on how, as a coach, and you've coached for a number of years, you also teach at Wilderness Ridge and give folks lessons and pointers and, you know, make that game more enjoyable. Tell me how you do it for someone who's trying to get better at golf that is a member out at Wilderness or wants to be a member, how you go about evaluation, somebody maybe you don't see every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then tell me about the evaluation process with Nebraska golf here and kind of a list of either to do good work or let's get better at this, and this. Let's talk about the term evaluation here and how you go to work on it.
You know, it's so unique because everybody is so different and they're in different places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have players that actually played and performed well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you saw an improvement in what it is that they were doing. So what are we trying to do with that player? You're maintaining the improvement that you saw and you're starting to add things to what they already do to help them become that much better. You have a player that you saw a decrease in production. You know, why? Figuring that out. Some of the things that we see on the golf course, whether it's a physical thing, whether it's a mental thing, you know, identifying what those are, understanding what they are, getting them to understand what that is, things that they're going to work on, things they have to work on to get themselves kind of back to where they were. You got to get back to where you were before you can go forward.
Sure.
You know, so it's like,
how do you keep from dropping off, though?
Yeah, that's one of the key things.
It's a million-dollar question.
It's about developing, I call it hope. So that's really what you're doing. You're giving them the information on what it is, getting them to believe in that it can be fixed and it will be fixed. No, and there's no doubt that it will be fixed and that you'll be okay. And that you'll play just like you did, and then we'll even get better. after we get through this rough patch, it's like you're going to be better because of it when we get through this. You know, again, we just don't know when that is, and we anticipate it's going to be sooner than later. You know, so that's giving the player themselves hope that I'm going to be okay. You know, that's the biggest thing. The difficult part is from a coaching, in my opinion anyways, that as I look and see players as they do certain things, I can see what they're capable of doing and what they kind of do. The player might not look at it and typically doesn't look at it the same way. So it's like, how does a player evaluate success? Well, in golf, they're either hitting the shots, making the putts, shooting the scores. So that's how they evaluate their success. You know, it's like if I made a bunch of putts or if I shot a really low score, that means I'm succeeding.
Doing well.
So I'm doing well, you know. Me, it's like I look at it as – because I know what it takes to be able to do that. So there's a process you have to go through. There's a skill set that you have to have, fundamentals you have to do and produce over and over over each shot. So it's like I see them be able to do that. Can they do it consistently? We got to get them to be able to do it more consistently so they do it more often, how they think about it, you know. So it's like sometimes a player – it's either good or bad, in my opinion. You know, sometimes they lose sight of they're actually doing okay, but they're not going to look at it as okay because I didn't shoot the number that I needed. So it's like, no,
you got to hammer home the point that there's a process to getting to the number.
Exactly. And you will get there. And you will get there. And it will start to show itself up as long as you stick with doing this. But it's easy for them to lose a little faith and lose a little confidence because it's like, how can I be doing good if I just made double on that hole? And it's like, well, you actually did some of the things you needed to do. But this is why, if we could have done this, we can learn to do this, you need to do this, you won't make double on the hole, you know? And it's sometimes not a lot. It's a lot of how you're thinking and how you're approaching what you're trying to do. So, you know, and like I said, some players are there, some players are not there. So each one is different on where and what you're trying to do with them to get them where you need to go. Mm-hmm. You know, some you're maintaining, some you have to get back to where they are. Some you are developing and taking them to another level because they can, you know, they're at a point where they can get to another level.
It's pretty fascinating just the different, you know, thinking of an interstate here and the different jumping off points of where each individual can be at and the attention that you need to give to kind of further their ability.
Yeah, and each one is so different. I mean, you have to approach each one differently, but at the same time, you're still after the same
end game.
But you got to go about it differently.
It's a different path to travel to get there.
Yeah, and everybody's at a different place, so you can't take the guy that's doing really well and kind of do the same thing that the guy that's not.
How you getting to the interstate? Going by the stadium?
That's right.
Taking Antelope Creek. Yeah.
You're going to get 84th. There. You can take a lot of different ways to get to the same place.
Which has the least amount of construction.
That's right.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Hey, if you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you in a little bit here on Hail Varsity Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart is in. Shuey. And don't forget about that Thanksgiving brunch at Wilderness Ridge. You can log on wildernessridgegolf.com and get your reservation there. The bourbon tasting tonight at Wilderness Ridge. And Shuey is in. We're just talking about the off season and going back to work and the evaluation that takes place from coaches and the evaluation that's going to take place with the players and then kind of arriving at a better season for all. And where can you max out? When it came time for you to evaluate, who did you go to for your game?
Some of it was self. I did a lot.
No, you did. You did self, but did you have a?
And I had a guy,
swing coach.
Yeah,
or a,
I did. Mike Cornell's his name, okay. And actually, his son is the assistant men's golf coach.
Okay, great.
So I worked with Mike a lot when I was on tour. So he was a voice that I went to. I trusted in. Mm-hmm, you know,
sure.
He helped.
That's a big
me.
Part of it too. It's getting that trust.
That's
right?
A huge part of it. You know, because we talked about golf and the development of my game. So there's a guy that knows what I do and helped me along the way, helped me a lot along the way, putting me in a position to do that. So, I mean, trust is a huge thing. You have to find somebody, you know, and work with somebody that you trust in. Mm-hmm. You trust in what it is. How do you do that? I mean, there's a lot of ways. One is you believe in what they're saying, you know. But, I mean, you still have to produce. I mean, that's the thing. And that's what builds trust more than anything. If you are doing what somebody's telling you to do, and it's kind of in line with what you believe and what you want, and you believe in what they're doing, and you start to see some end results, it's a lot easier to trust in what they're doing, you know. If you keep doing what it is they're trying to do, what you're trying to do, but you're not getting any results, I mean, it takes a lot of intestinal fortitude to keep on that path, you know, because it's like, man, pretty soon there comes a point where it's like, am I really moving forward, or am I moving backwards, or am I staying the same? Mm-hmm. So it's like that component is huge. You have to trust in that person that they will help you get to where it is you want to go, you know, and you need some successes along the way. So again, going kind of back to what a coach sees, and what the player sees, sometimes they need to be aware of the successes that they're actually are producing. Mm-hmm. Because, again, it's a lot easier for the player to not see those successes. Because, again, they're bottom-line driven. It's like, I either made it or I didn't. Mm-hmm. If I'm making putts, I'm putting good. If I'm not making putts...
There's only a certain amount of time you can hold in the gray area, like, good, I'll get it next time, I'm almost there. There needs to be... a get there point.
I did get there. Man, I did get there.
I won.
So it's like, man, or I got close. It's like, man, I put myself in that position. So it's like, man, I can see if I keep on this path and keep doing these things, it keeps putting me in that position to be able to do what it is that I ultimately want to do, which is to shoot low scores and win tournaments and things like that. So it's like when that faith and trust gets a little bit compromised in that, it's like, man, I'm not putting good again, or I'm not hitting it good again, or, you know, I'm finishing the middle of the pack, you know, because then a player starts to doubt themselves too. Mm-hmm. It's like, am I really good enough to do this?
Sure.
You know, it's like, and you can't ever go there because, again, that's not the case at all. That's not the case at all. That's what starts to limit us in our development and what we actually can and what are capable of doing. So,
Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, Husker Golf, Shuey. This is too quick. Hang out. Brad Edwards, College Football Insider, Game Day up next. We'll get to your calls, too, on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Into hour two, we'll get to more of your calls. You'll hear from Coach Diaco in its entirety on just what he thought of the post-Ohio State film session. If you missed that at practice last night, Mike Shewhart's hanging out, Husker Golf, Wilderness Ridge, Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke. Now we head to College Football Insider, ESPN Game Day, ESPN Radio, Brad Edwards, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, how are you, sir?
Oh, doing great, Chris. How are you?
We're doing all right. Who'd have thought that maybe the game of the season for Nebraska was against Purdue? That's kind of the feel I've got going into this weekend with everything surrounding the program. You're off a bye week. You've had two bad losses, and you get to go to West Lafayette in the I can't do a John Facenda voice, but in the potential rain and cold temperatures and wind, right? I mean, it's a really big game around here, and it's a really big game for these players to try and bounce back with. Also, just a monster national schedule. You'll be locked in on a Big Ten game between Ohio State and Penn State. So a lot to get into, but I wanted to start with Nebraska here. And we started the show off talking about the fan base, the three different lines they may be in here, the ones that have moved on from the season, some that are staying the course, the others that are undecided on what they think about this staff, if it can get turned around or not. When you look at this program, Brad, and you look at Nebraska and the finish to maybe see another year for Riley, does it have to be 5-0 with the Penn State upset? Does it have to be 4-1? What's your view on it from a national perspective?
If he has to beat Penn State, then I would say it's probably pretty hopeless. I guess the question is, what constitutes progress and how much progress is needed for the new AD to see? That's really what it comes down to. And look, they didn't change ADs for nothing. I mean, the whole point behind this, I think, was mostly football and getting things right. And so the idea is that either things change quickly on the field or there's going to be a change at coach. Now, I have no idea whether that has to be this year or this offseason or whether there's a longer period being allowed than that. But I would think that what we've seen to this point would not qualify as progress. So, certainly Purdue is one of those teams that you would look at and you'd think, okay, this is someone Nebraska needs to be able to beat. And I'm guessing there are a few more of those left on the schedule. You know, games that you would think that, okay, if this program is making progress, they would win. I don't think Penn State's one of those, but maybe all the others, you know, fall into that bucket. And that's kind of where I am, is that unless Nebraska wins the majority of its games going forward, I don't see any way they don't make a coaching change unless that was never in the cards to begin with.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, we were chatting a little earlier about an article that was out comparing one of the jobs that both the Nebraska and the Tennessee job, as we speak, are not open. That said, if they become open, which is the better job? Is it Tennessee? Is it Nebraska? I'd like your insight on this. When you look at the Nebraska job, what's appealing about it? When you look at the Tennessee job, what's appealing about it? And then also the other side of that coin, what's difficult about the Nebraska gig? What's difficult about the Tennessee gig?
Yeah, so for starters, I would say, you know, they both have good history and tradition. They both have, they both have resources. There's a lot of money that's poured into it. Facilities are nice at both places. So you have that going for you, obviously a passionate fan base. To me, the biggest difference is that if you're looking to come in and win, I think Nebraska's division is winnable. I don't know that Tennessee's, even though it's been the SEC East has been down for several years, I don't know that you would necessarily look at it the same way, because Tennessee is basically in the same division with Georgia. Georgia is the way that they're playing right now and the way that they're recruiting. I think that's not a situation I would want to step into. And I guess here's the difference: is that there's a team in their division, actually there are two of them, if you consider Georgia and Florida, that are in two of the most talent-rich states for recruiting. And that's what they're up against. Whereas if you're in the Big Ten West, look, obviously Wisconsin has sustained success for a long time, but they're not doing it by reeling in big recruits and just putting talent on the field that you're not able to match.
Sure.
And so to me, that's the difference, is that Nebraska has every reason to believe that it should be as talented, if not more talented, than anyone else in its division. And I don't think that Tennessee can realistically say that. So for that reason, I would choose Nebraska. I mean, I get maybe if Tennessee's able to pay a lot more just because they're in the SEC. That doesn't even make sense, though, because the Big Ten teams are actually, I think, getting more money than the SEC team. So,
yes. Yep.
I don't know. I don't know why someone would take the Tennessee job over the Nebraska job. I think you can get in recent years, you've been able to recruit better players to Tennessee than Nebraska's been able to get in. But, like I said, it also applies to your competition, and your competition is going to get better players than you at Tennessee, and that shouldn't be the case at Nebraska.
I think you're right on with that, and the West is easier than the East, and your crossover could be brutal at Nebraska. I mean, you had Ohio State this year, and they smoked you. But your permanent crossover is Alabama, and until Nick retires,
exactly.
You know, until Nick retires, that isn't a good thing. And that was just interesting, and Nebraska seems to be more appealing. And the coaching carousel will heat up. Let's talk college football playoff for a second, because next week, next Tuesday, the first playoff reveal happens. And I wanted to get your thoughts here on a way that two SEC teams get in, and is there any way that a team like Clemson gets passed over as defending champs because of a loss like Syracuse, and flip it around? Could there be a scenario where the Big Ten gets skipped?
I don't think there's any way Clemson gets left out if they win out.
Okay.
If they finish with that one loss, I think they are in. You know, the SEC scenario is interesting. The only way I can see it happening is if Alabama and Georgia are both undefeated going into the SEC championship game, and then Alabama wins. I say that because Georgia has a good resume. They already have the win at Notre Dame. Now, both of these teams to be undefeated would have to win at Auburn in November, which is another quality win. But Alabama really wouldn't have much else on its resume, because the Florida State win turned out to not be worth much. And so that's why I think Georgia could maybe survive not being a conference champ at 12-1. I don't know that Alabama could. But then the other thing about it is that the SEC championship game, I think, has to be the type of game. I mean, recognizing that if you put them both in the playoff, you're either going to have them against each other in a semifinal as a rematch, or there could be a rematch for the national championship if they're in opposite semis. So either way, there's a possibility they could play again. And I think for you to do that as a selection committee, the first matchup would have to be one that you know, you felt like could have gone either way. And maybe if there had been five more plays, it would have gone the other way. So it has to be a really good game that people across the country wouldn't care or wouldn't mind seeing again. You know, the Big Ten, I look at, it's interesting with Penn State, because looking at their remaining schedule, I feel like this is an elimination game this weekend for both teams. I think
really?
Everyone understands that with Ohio State.
Yes.
You know, I think if Ohio State takes a second loss, they're done. Nobody's really going to argue that. Penn State, even though this could end up being their only loss and they end up 11-1, not winning the division, which is exactly what Ohio State did last year and got in, if they don't beat Ohio State, who will they have a win against that will be worth anything to the committee? Because if favorites win out, so if Michigan loses to Wisconsin and Ohio State, if Michigan State loses to Penn State and Ohio State, what win will Penn State have that will hold up with the committee? I don't know that they'll even have a top 25 win at the end. And so that's a problem if you're trying to get in and you're not a conference champ. So I think if you're looking for a scenario where the Big Ten doesn't get in, I think it kind of starts with Wisconsin being the conference champion, because I think you could make a case that Wisconsin, even if undefeated, could be left out. I know, you know, we probably all said for quite a while that there's no way they're leaving out an undefeated Power 5 champion. But I don't think that we ever envisioned a scenario where a team could actually win a Power 5 conference and have only one win over a ranked team all season. And that's kind of what it looks like for Wisconsin. You know, they've got Michigan coming in. But as I said earlier, you know, with Penn State, if Michigan loses to the teams that you would expect them to lose to, they're not going to be ranked at the end.
No.
And so Wisconsin could very easily go into that Big Ten title game without having played a ranked team up to that point. And if they pull one upset, I just think it's fair to ask the question, if you've beaten one ranked team the entire year, although it would be a very good team that won, do you deserve to be in the playoff? And I think what it probably comes down to is, how impressive do they look in winning these games, especially down the stretch? So really, from here on out, once the committee starts meeting, I think for Wisconsin, style points matter. It's not just winning. I think in the event that you know, that it plays out the way that we're saying, they need to look impressive. They can't be squeaking by with, you know, 8-point wins over Purdue like they had a couple weeks ago.
Well, Wisconsin's been a nightmare with turnovers. I mean, they should have put 40 spots on some teams, and they looked super impressive against Nebraska in the fourth quarter. You know where Nebraska's at this year, but they have not played clean football. They've won despite themselves. Brad, got about 3.5, 4 minutes. I want to talk about this weekend. Notre Dame, is this the first step in them making people think when it comes to playoff chatter? I know they won last week as well, survived, throttled SC, but that was an elimination game too for those two teams. But this schedule looks awesome on paper for Notre Dame when it comes to opportunity. How do you see them doing this weekend against NC State?
I would say that the Notre Dame teams of really like the last 20 years almost all would lose this game. You know, they have a big win. Yeah, big win they got excited about, and then they go, you know, lose a game at home and just kind of let the air out of the fan base. That's what Notre Dame really has done pretty much post Lou Holtz, except for that one season that they made it to the national title game in 2012. So it's an interesting matchup just because it's strength on strength. You know, Notre Dame obviously runs the ball extremely well. NC State, that's what they do best, is stop the run. And I think it's probably going to be decided elsewhere, which is basically, you know, can Notre Dame throw the ball, or NC State's offense? Can they end up scoring a lot of points? So it really is a pivotal game, and we focus so much on what Notre Dame has on the line in terms of, you know, being in playoff position. NC State's not out of it yet either. I mean, you know, we look at them as a potential spoiler in the ACC, but if they win this game, they've got Clemson coming into their place next week. And if they beat Clemson, Notre Dame-Clemson back-to-back weeks, then they're sitting there with one loss in the driver's seat to get to the ACC title game against a Miami team that looks very beatable, or Virginia Tech, either one. But the path is there for NC State to win the ACC at 12-1. And they're in complete control of that destiny as far as I'm concerned.
Brad, about 60 seconds here, bud. Is TCU on upset alert in Ames?
I think so. You know, I really thought that the Iowa State thing at Norman was a fluke, and was not expecting them to be able to go into Lubbock and win last week. And not only did they do it, but they did it, you know, pretty easily. And, you know, you look at TCU, I mean, look, I think they've been impressive in most games so far, but Ames is just such a weird place to go into because it's not that big game atmosphere, huge crowd, really loud, and it can kind of trick you if you're a visiting team. And so, I think TCU's on upset alert here, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how good Iowa State is, because the truth of the matter, if they win either this game or 2 weeks from now at home against Oklahoma State, they have a shot to get to the Big 12 title, which is just mind-blowing. Now, if they do that, they're probably going to kill any playoff chances the conference has in the process, but it's a great story.
It is, and the wind never stops blowing at Ames, Brad. I'll just say that. Brad Edwards with us, ESPN Insider, College Game Day, ESPN Radio, at J. Brad Edwards. Brad, have a great weekend. It was fun to catch up. Thanks for your time today.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Take care.
Take care. There he is, Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio. So around the way, and, you know, he threw it out there, and he's right. What's progress look like, and are you seeing it at Nebraska? We'll hear from Bobby D. And more of your calls, 466-3776, 800-825-5865.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Big thanks to Brad Edwards, 80 years and counting. We've been doing things the AgriGold way over the decades. Together, we've built a brand that's truly different. different because of our knowledge, different because of our passion, different because of our representative voice, and that's the voice of the customer. Our true partners, providing customers with the very best seed, always backed by a handshake and a promise of more diversity, less risk, and greater yield. For more information, visit your friends at agrigold.com, 800-262-7333. Lots to talk about with Nebraska football and the three lines. If you think about it, when you go to the bank, there's three tellers. So you're getting food, whatever, you're waiting in line. We kind of started the show asking the question and trying to figure out where you're at, what line are you in. It's time to move on when it comes to this season. You're staying the course, think things will turn around. Or three, you're undecided. And the feedback has been kind of, The input I've gotten is, look, Riley's doing okay. Thomas called in. We had to take him off air. We've been just locked in and loaded today with content. Listen, Riley's doing well. Recruiting's fine. You know what? It's pretty hard for him right now with the whole Scott Frost. Everywhere you turn, everywhere you look, there's something Frost-related. And I think the main feedback here is either you're undecided or you have – checked out on the year. And my question is, what gets you back on the bandwagon if that's possible? Is a 4-1 finish good enough for you? Is a 5-0 finish your requirement for more time? And that's been a major talking point here. Time and growth, right? Young players, teams dinged up. It's a new system. It's a new year. It's like year one. Now, you've heard that this week. And I'm not saying it's an excuse. In some areas, it's true. It is true that it does take some time. We'll hear about that timetable from Coach Diaco. I've been promising you that for a couple hours now. And I will get to it. You'll hear from Bobby D here in a minute. We'll get to the phones here. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Cork and Tap House, 800-825-5865, 466-3776. John's with us on Hail Varsity Radio. John, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, I got a couple of takes on this whole situation. I do feel bad for the current staff. I think, especially the defensive guys, I think they've been kind of put in a tough spot here. And I think given some time, I really think they can turn it around and have a defense that's good. As far as Coach Riley, though, you know, when he first got here, I guess the theme was our roster needed more talent. Mm-hmm. Like, the last staff left them with nothing. And so, okay, I don't believe that, but... Okay, and so you give them, now we're in, you know, 3 years into this deal, and we're not as good as we were when he started, and so that that team didn't play itself out, and while we might have some players on the roster that are better, they're not playing better, and so I'm kind of mixed. I think Mike Riley needs to be shown the door politely, because he's been nothing but a gentleman while he's been here. But I sure wish that usually when that happens, the rest of the staff goes. Mm-hmm. But I'd kind of like to hang on to these defensive guys. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
John, thanks for the phone call. I think there is reason for some optimism in this sense, where the defense, you could talk yourself into it being better in year two. When you go from a 4-3 to a 3-4, yes. It is moving from a house to an apartment in some instances. Just where you're putting your stuff, right? Your garage is tinier. So I think defensively you're accurate. When it comes to the offense and playing better and getting better and developing, you're just not seeing a trajectory of points being scored. You're not seeing the consistency in balance or the run game. And you're not seeing guys that have been here for a number of years. I'm talking the juniors you got on the team. At wideout or on the offensive line, play at an all-conference level. They've either leveled off or stopped growing. Now, the answer to that, if you're pro Riley, is, well, give it some more time, give it some more players. But you haven't seen development or at least consistency from a point production standpoint anything past year one. You're scoring 30 points a game with Tommy doing his thing, and there were turnovers, yes, and you were 6-7, yes. To beat a top five team that year, yes. And where's it gone since the Ohio State game? Here is the bottom line, and Saturday again is the game of the year. Slap me, hand me the breathalyzer, Danny. It is, because it's going to tell you all you need to know. With this offense, with this team, with their belief, with their faith, with their psyche. How they go perform Saturday night. And how, when it's going to be maybe rainy, and there's going to be wind, and it's going to be 45, so your hands are cold, and it's going to be hard to catch the football. Are you going to be able to lean on the run game against Purdue that is not the Steel Curtain, that is not the Alabama front seven? And you did it for a half against Wisconsin. You were damn proud of that. Didn't do it for a full game. I mean, therein lies your answers. Listen, with Nebraska football, you need a step forward as far as finding common ground. Rowing in the same direction, pulling in the same direction on that rope. You don't have it. You can go walk down the street, take a phone call, get an email, check out Twitter, and get 15 different responses, 15 different takes on what should happen. It ain't 9 out of 10 saying the same thing. And diversity's fine. That's awesome. But from a fan base standpoint of what's wanted, the end result to that want is competing. Not having to win it every year, but be in it. Be in it to win it. Be in position in late November where you can control your own destiny for the West. Not either needing some help or being out of it because you're 3 games under 500. It's just been a mess. It's been a mess. But I think just as quickly as you have been turned off by back-to-back Wisconsin and Ohio State performances, Purdue ain't going to get you back, you know, sipping the Kool-Aid. But it'll stop the negativity for a moment, at least. It'll give the chance for the team to take a deep breath and go into another week where you can get a win against Northwestern and finish out like you want to. Like all parties want, whether you want change or not, you don't want to see Nebraska lose to Purdue, lose out, finish at 3-9, 4-8, 5-7, 6-6, 7-5 you'd be okay with because your team – that's the other thing. I mean, the biggest complaint since two Saturdays ago has been the fight. The punch-drunk look in the eyes of the guys you root for and you spend money on and you love. I mean, that's your most proud export – in this state is your football team. You care so much about it, and that's awesome. It's what makes you great. But what you don't have right now is the fan base on the same page or the belief that it'll get better. And maybe it can defensively. You're not sure about it offensively, and you're not sure the direction of the program. You win on Saturday night. It's not a fix-it. It's not a cure-all. It's not stitches. It's maybe a Band-Aid. But you'll take a Band-Aid right now to stop the bleeding. Let's talk Bob Diaco for a second. Let's talk Coach Diaco. And he was asked about his thoughts on the Ohio State film. We don't get an answer here, but we get a description of how the answer is going to happen.
It's one of those things, right? We'll be honest, right? I'm not going to give you coach speak. I'm not going to say the coach speak company line, right? Because you want an honest answer about the game or where we're at or the defense and moving forward, right? And I want to give it to you. And unfortunately, that sometimes can sound like making excuses. I don't want to be that way. I'm not that way. And I don't want to be framed that way. You know what I mean? But I want to answer the question.
Okay. So what'd you think after the Ohio State game?
It's not instant. This isn't powder, add water, shake.
Okay. So it isn't slim fast for the defense. Time, again, the emphasis for Nebraska, this defense, this scheme change. Can the more time you had, specifically the week off you had, make things all better against an offense that averages 16 points?
As you think about, and I thought deeply about it, like you think about Mick Stoltenberg, for example. And it's a great example, and there's a few examples of that. This is an instant. And when we met in January, February, it's not instant. This isn't powder, add water, shake. It's a holistic, all-encompassing, all-consuming process to create a great defense. And it takes time.
Okay. Listen, that isn't, as he said, coach speak. That isn't BS. I think as a Nebraska fan, you look at it and go, yeah. Yeah, you make this type of shift, there's going to be some growing pains. You've heard from a majority of experts since last spring. It's going to take a while. Here's what you can't stomach, though, is the lack of aggressiveness. If you're going to get beat, at least get beat swinging. And you can't stomach your corner play. You're giving away yards and you're not tackling. From a safety standpoint, man, you've been the walking wounded. Good luck and God bless with that. More from Coach Diaco. We continue on. A Wednesday edition of Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Chris. How are you guys doing?
Doing okay. We've waited a week, and it's still extremely tough to watch. But man, Gordon Hayward, tremendous player. Butler Bulldog now with Coach Stevens, his college coach, out for a while with that dislocation and fracture of his left tibia. The injury heard around the NBA, around the sports world a week ago. Dr. Brandon, what are your thoughts here when you see something like that? And the shock was evident with Hayward immediately after it happened.
Yeah, just brutal. You know, those are such terrible injuries. You know, you think about the Ware kid from Louisville a couple years ago, kind of similar deal. Clearly, this wasn't an open fracture this time. It didn't look like it compared to Ware's injury, which is much worse. But again, gruesome to see. You know, you think a few of these kind of along the way. Obviously, the Ware injury, the Joe Theismann injury, those kind of things, it kind of falls in that category, the way that thing looks. You know, more importantly, just a devastating injury, very difficult thing to obviously deal with as an athlete. Fortunately, very rare to have this injury as an athlete. But again, a long and kind of difficult road for him, and just tough for anybody to have to endure something like that.
Dr. Brandon, how does something like this happen? And I know it was underneath the glass. And is it an instance where you jump up and land sideways and the force and gravity cause something like this? In your experience and in some of the studies and other injuries similar to this out there, is there any common cause for it that forces this type of just gruesome dislocation and fracture?
Yeah, you know, the couple of things come to mind when you see these. I mean, obviously, you know, high level coming down with that kind of body type, sure, you know, you could potentially create this type of injury. Again, not that common. You think about what he was doing, how many, you know, thousands of times it happens during the season, and that never is an issue. So you start to think about some other things. So this was kind of a hot topic with, you know, Kevin Ware when he had his injury. Is, you know, is there something else going on? Did this gentleman have like a bone cyst in his tibia that, you know, created a weak spot on the bone and then finally just hit it just right and it broke through that spot? And so that would be like a bone cyst type issue. You also could talk about maybe even a stress fracture, which again, something that's kind of weakened the bone in that area that, you know, creates a weak spot, a place where this thing can break with, you know, pretty minimal trauma. And so those would be some of the things that I would think about in this situation. Again, it's hard to, you know, pinpoint which one it was because we're not, you know, sitting here looking at his x-rays or MRI, whatever imaging modalities they use for him. But those would be some things that I would think about in this situation, being that it is a pretty rare occurrence and being that it was kind of essentially a non-contact type of injury. Compared to, you know, something like a Joe Theismann where somebody ran into your leg like they did. Okay.
Dr. Brandon Seifer with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Gordon Hayward, his injury, the dislocation and fracture of that left tibia. Dr. Brandon, now when you guys step in with this, what's the immediate medical response? And then what's your guys' job when a Gordon Hayward comes to you to say, fix me and get me back to normal?
So, you know, in this situation, you're dealing with a dislocation and when the joint kind of pops out of place. And so when you have a dislocation, you know, even if there's a fracture in the area or nearby, I mean, the goal is always to reduce that as best you can and get it put back into place. You know, there's always a myth about, well, you shouldn't touch it if it's fractured. Well, that's not true. You want to actually get it, you know, reduced if you can or to put it back in place. And so whenever you have these kind of injuries in the field, and I've seen a few of these, you know, you put them back in place and the athlete feels a lot better. Obviously, it hurts for a few seconds and actually feels a lot better. And usually if you catch these acute like this, they pop right back in really quickly without too much effort. Anyway, that's important for a couple of reasons. One, if your ankle or joint is dislocated, it's bad for your cartilage. It can create an arthritic issue down the road. Two, it also could be a kind of a neurovascular issue. So you're, you know, pitching off your blood supply or you're, you know, stretching a nerve, and that can create some, you know, permanent damage. And so we try to get these back in as soon as we can, almost immediately when you get on the field, and we'll put this back in real fast. In addition to that, you know, if you leave these things out for a while, it just makes it that much more difficult down the road to do it, to reduce it if you wait, you know, half hour to an hour. So that's what we do first. Then we split them up, come into the office with him. You're going to the, in this kind of situation, going to the ER, get some x-rays, get the appropriate imaging, find out exactly what you're dealing with. And then from there, you know, that surgical planning starts. You know, to have a gruesome injury like that, clearly you're going to have some type of fracture to create that. It's exceedingly rare, almost not next to impossible, but almost impossible to have a dislocation and not break something that needs to be fixed in this part of the body. So then we start talking about treatment options for them, you know, surgically. So one, you've reduced it, you got to splint it up. You want to give it a few days to kind of let the soft tissues go down in terms of swelling. If there's not much swelling acutely, you could potentially fix it acutely. And so then we have to talk about, you know, what exactly did he do? What did he break? And there's not a lot of great data on the internet about what he did specifically in terms of what he fractured. I've heard ankle fracture, I've heard tibia fracture. And so that kind of introduces a whole spectrum of treatment options for him, you know, depending on is it tibia versus is it, you know, truly ankle. You go from plates and screws all the way up to putting a big rod inside the bone would be some treatment options.
Dr. Brandon Seifer with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. At Jock Doc Wednesday, we're talking Gordon Hayward's injury. When it comes to recovery and getting back to normal, A, after this injury, can a guy get back to normal? B, what's the timetable on recovery and what type of rehab is in front of him?
You know, so there's going to be a period of some non-weight bearing after this. When you fix the fracture, it'll be a, you know, a short-term period of non-weight bearing, depending on the nature of the fracture. But right away, you know, if it's a fairly stable fracture, you get really good fixation in there. It's more of kind of a straight, simple fracture instead of one that's comminuted. One that's comminuted has a lot of little pieces and fragments to it. Those, you have to be more careful about motion. But if it's a simple fracture, you fix it, they can start some early range of motion with therapy, but you really won't be doing any kind of real active, strong stuff for about 4 to 6 weeks. And then it's going to be obviously a long recovery therapy-wise. You know, you're not putting weight on it for 6 or 8 weeks, sometimes longer. Total recovery time on something like this to get him back, you know, doing some jogging. He's probably not jogging for 8 to 12 weeks. Jumping, that kind of cutting, that kind of stuff. And we could be talking 4 to 6 months, you know, from that perspective. getting back to kind of being the player he was or close to it. You're probably looking at a year, year and a half maybe. And then that begs the question, you know, what kind of player is he going to be going forward? These are really difficult injuries to recover from, and these change an athlete quite a bit. And so when you look at his, you know, explosiveness from a turn of going up and dunking and jumping and that kind of stuff, you know, that's probably going to be quite a bit different for him. But if you're looking at a guy like him who's pretty tall, does some post work, you know, he might be able to do that kind of playing pretty well still. But clearly I think he'll be a different player. There's not a great track record because these injuries are so rare. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of great data or great track records on these guys getting back to that level. I mean, that's the frustrating part, you know, that Kevin Ware gentleman never really progressed that well after this happened to him. Obviously Joe Theismann didn't play again. Our treatments are probably better now, but still very difficult to get back. It will be a long road, and unfortunately, being a pessimistic for him in this injury, he's probably not going to get back to that same level.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Gordon Hayward. Dr. Brandon, we'll catch up again. Thanks for a few minutes.
Sounds great, Chris. You guys take care.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Thank you, Kramer. Winding down a Wednesday. Thanks to you for chiming in. And thanks to Mike Schuhart for sitting in. Brad Edwards for joining us. Brandon Vogel and Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago. We didn't get a lot of Diaco time. We got a little Diaco time, but what it's got everyone chatting about, and again, more hope and growth when it comes to the narrative this week on Nebraska football as they head into Purdue. This gauntlet thrown down from Bobby D.
There is no doubt that we are going to create a great defense. We are going to create the best defense in the country here. There's no doubt about that. It's just going to take time as these gaps are eliminated, minimized, and eliminated for every player. And the players are good enough to do that, to do just that. The ones on the team and the ones we're trying to have join the team. It's exciting. The future's exciting. I can personally see all the people and the gaps, and the staff included.
Okay. So what he gave you last night, go to HailVarsity.com. They got the full Diaco experience for you. He's not wrong that in a year, in a winter to spring, it can be better on defense. But right now, the thing you got to ask yourself if you're a Nebraska fan heading into Purdue, it's not that your defense this soon in a new system can't check Purdue. It's not that your defense can't cover Purdue's wideout. It's not that Nebraska's defense can't stop Purdue's run game or even Jack with a dual threat quarter with two quarterbacks. It's what do these guys believe now in week seven, in game seven, in this defense? They buy what's being sold, or have they been, I'm out, bro. I'm good. You guys got 7 years to throw back there. And even if we do get there, we bring some heat, is anyone going to cover a wideout? It's probably a bit too personal. It's not meant to sound that way. But really, just from a positioning standpoint, the guy's in position to go make a play. Some are. Some are not. And it kind of comes down to technique, doesn't it? Don't sweat the technique. Well, please do sweat the technique. Do we have time for cut seven? About decap? Another example of, you know, leading up to, I mean, listen, the cuts from cut three to cut 11 was all that whole answer on Ohio State film. But you know what? Diaco's high on decap. He's going to grow. He's going to be good.
You take DiCaprio Boodle, big enough, fast enough, courageous, possesses all the tangible traits and intangible, invested, passionate. Like, I can't say enough about both those guys. They are absolutely awesome guys, lovely. And DiCaprio, so he's new to the system, so that's a...
Did it just stop on you?
...to the system, so that's a gap, which is closing. And but he's also never played in college football games before. So he has two gaps. So there's two gaps.
He's not talking about the two-gap defense that if you don't have Sue, you don't have nothing. No, he's talking about learning curve and gap between understanding and execution. But he laid that out. Have a great Wednesday. Soak up the sun. Enjoy it. Go see Shuey and play some golf at Wilderness. And come on back tomorrow. Bill Moose, Nebraska Athletic Director, going to be with us. Uncle Jerry DiNardo, Gary Barnett, A Loaded Thursday.